a nice opening date for Schweitzer, given that we've had such warm and wet weather, not that much snow so far. Happy to see that happening. Other things going on around town, Susie?
Well, I know something that's going on tonight, and it's very important for KRFY. It's our annual corporation meeting, and it's really a membership. Corporation is kind of a big word, but we want our listeners and our members to show up tonight. It's open to the public. That's at 6 p.m. at the East Bonner County Library meeting room. So come on, listeners, supporters, and community members, join us for this public meeting and get an update on how our community radio station is doing and what's in store for KRFY in 2017.
That's right. And, of course, the board members will be there. It's an opportunity for community members to let us know about what they'd like to hear. This is the community-owned radio station, so we want to hear from people. Hopefully folks will show up for that.
We have a lot of information about how you can get involved too at the station.
That's right.
If you've ever had that
thought. Place runs on volunteers, so
absolutely
anybody that would like to get involved in the glamorous world of nonprofit radio, you are invited. Some other things going on around town. Festival of Trees is having a family night. That's tomorrow, December 1st. The Backcountry Film Festival is coming Friday. That's December 2nd, and that's being put on by Selkirk Outdoor Leadership and Education. Of course, there's a ton of the Sandpoint Waldorf School is having their Christmas fair on Saturday.
And we will have someone in the studio here in a little while to talk about that.
That's right. Towards the end of the show, so folks, hang on for that part of the show. We're going to be talking with one of the Waldorf folks about the Christmas fair, which is quite a gala, warm, hometowny sort of event for people to go to, with lots of handmade local crafts and cool things.
Fun events for the kids, but we'll be talking about that in about 8:45.
So people can see our entire calendar at KRFY.org, and of course it's provided by sandpointonline.com. So there's a ton going on in town. Do check out the calendars.
Absolutely. And I think we'd love to get to our guests right now from the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force, Brenda Hammond and Sharon McCann. There's a lot we can talk about, you know, that we have listeners, new listeners all the time. So that the fact that we have a task force, a human rights task force here in Bonner County, is an important for our citizens. And one of you could give us a little overview of the organization and that we're talking about.
Do you want to start with that?
Why don't you, since you were involved at the very beginning.
Okay, Brenda.
All right, I'm Brenda.
You're on.
The Human Rights Task Force was formed in 1991 here in Sandpoint in Bonner County. And it was a response to the Aryan presence in the nation, in this region, as well as other kinds of white supremacist organizations that were viewing our region as a good place to set up a state because of the lack of diversity. And we followed the lead of the Kootenai County Task Force, who had been dealing with a number of threats in their area, including Father Bill Wasmuth's rectory being bombed by the Aryan Nations and the order that was associated with them. They came and held a big public meeting here in Sandpoint. We had about 400 people who attended, and we decided at that point that we needed to form a task force here to take a stand for human rights and to be an instrument for protecting people from discrimination.
So really a call to action at that point in time.
Yes.
And since 1992, when you really formed officially, what has been the role? And then we'll get into what's currently on the mm-hmm. table.
Well, I think the task force has taken different roles through the years. In the year 2000, I think, the Aryan Nations lost the lawsuit that was brought against them by the Kootenai County Task Force and the Southern Poverty Law Center, with Morris Dees and Norm Gissel working closely together on that.
And just to give a little more background on that, mm-hmm. was a harassment case down in Kootenai County. And that's where the Aryan Nations had their compound, if you will.
Exactly.
The right. leader of that group at that time was Richard Butler. Mm-hmm. And basically what the effect of the lawsuit was, it put them out of business because due to their losing that lawsuit, they ended up losing the property that was their so-called compound. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd throw that in there.
That's important.
Yeah, well, and our readers, our listeners probably aren't going to, that have not been here during that period of time, mm-hmm. probably don't realize what a big impact that was having around here to have this presence. Mm-hmm. Richard Butler and his group, which was very small, that's the thing.
Right.
They got an outsized amount of attention and publicity from mm-hmm. all around the country, but they were really just a handful of guys. The fact that the community came together with the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force and the Kootenai County mm-hmm. Task Force to basically repel these guys with their creed of white supremacy was mm-hmm. a pretty significant event around here in the early 1990s.
Right.
Yeah.
So it really,
I thought I'd throw that in.
I think it's important because we still, North Idaho still has the stain of that reputation. So as you travel around the country and let people know that you're from Idaho, they always ask something about, you know, the are there still skinheads there or mm-hmm. whatever, that kind of influence.
Yeah, no question. At that time, the early 1990s up into the 2000s, mm-hmm. it was one of the, Idaho was famous for potatoes and white supremacists. and that fortunately, because we have turned the corner there, I hope, we don't have that reputation so much anymore, but you still encounter it a lot mm-hmm. when you're out. And I'm sure many of our listeners have had that same response from people when they're out and away from Sandpoint.
And I didn't mean to imply that that there is no longer any threat. That is one visible threat that has disappeared. The Aryans have found other places to organize, but there are still a lot of people that cling to the same beliefs of white supremacy. And there are people, I don't know, Sharon, if you wanted to talk about that, you've been talking with people and doing some reading about the readout movement and other folks that are moving in with the idea of, again, having kind of a European, as they call it, enclave.
Yeah, there seems to be, I think it's just the fear. Some people have fear of the government, federal government, coming and grabbing their guns or whatever, infringing on their rights that have to do with guns and property and individual rights. And I guess from what I've read, this part of the country, not just Idaho, but Wyoming, Montana, Utah, maybe people are thinking they need to come and, buy up property and have a place where they can be safe and grow their own food and in case something catastrophic happens. I'm not really sure exactly what they mean, but it's certainly something that's happening, and there are even realtors who are promoting this.
That is somewhat different than what we're talking about with the Aryan Nations.
It is, but it's something, but the fear seems to be the same. It's something about I think the globalization is made people fearful, and they see this part of the country as being a kind of a safe place.
And the readout movement is definitely, they have their own media going on, mm-hmm. and they're active in our local and regional politics mm-hmm. as well. I'm curious. Hopefully we're not going off on different tangents here than we might want to. But I'm curious, has the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force had any outreach to some of the folks that are, identified with the readout movement to talk to them about?
No, and I think that would be a wonderful thing for the task force to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so,
because
too.
Because whenever there's fear involved, the more face-to-face communication you can have, the better you can promote understanding. We can understand them. And I think Sharon was talking about fear being a factor. Everyone can relate to that. We all want to be safe, and that's part of what we were here to talk about this morning is how people can be safe. What do you do if you're feeling threatened? So people feel threatened for lots of different reasons.
And I kind of wanted to get to that subject a little bit. Mm-hmm. As the changing climate in our country changes, as the social and political climate changes, just for fact, it's been reported that over 1,000 incidents of harassment, intimidation, and discrimination against minorities and different religious groups and whatever has been reported in the last 10 days. Has the focus of the work of the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force changed with knowing this, as these things change and become evident in our communities and in our nation, I guess? Has that changed? And then we can get into if someone finds themselves in a situation and what the rights are, the laws are, and mm-hmm. here in Sandpoint, the county and the state. Mm-hmm. So at this point in time.
Yeah, what I can say is I hold the telephone for the task force. And just recently, following the day after the election, we had 5 requests for membership and information on our website in 1.5 days. That's the unusual. So I noticed that. Mm-hmm. We've had some calls regarding bullying. The only other call I got really didn't have to do with that.
Can I ask you about the bullying calls? Were those based on somebody being harassed for their race or their gender?
Race. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was in a school.
Mm-hmm.
Kids being bullied. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So have these kind of things, knowing what the potential might be, changed your direction and focused, or enhanced it, or kind of brought new information forward, such as putting your name out there, having more outreach, mm-hmm. things like that?
Well, I think our focus changed after the Aryans left, and we, were able to not have to focus just on that one thing. So we focused on discrimination for lots of different reasons, including sexual orientation and gender identity, bullying issues, immigrant issues. And we were able to focus more on education, more of a preventative kind of inoculating the community and against these kinds of threats. But certainly, since the election, I think that everyone has felt a call to stand up for the vulnerable groups that are among us. And I know that everyone on the task force feels a commitment to do that. And we want people to know that the task force can be called. I mean, we have our phone number is 290-2932. Wait a second. I found my glasses.
It's 208-290-2732.
Okay, thank you. I'm getting old. 290-2732. But if you have any concerns, if you feel threatened, or if you feel like you're being harassed, there are agencies and protections that are built into our system, but the task force is here and can help people to navigate through those resources and agencies and be side by side with people if they are, wanting that kind of support. For instance, in the situation that Sharon mentioned, one of our board members made some inquiries, talked with the principal, talked with the superintendent of the school, talked with the family, and hopefully is going to be able to help better that situation for those children in that school, but also take advantage of this opportunity to educate other children about how what they do makes others feel.
So the Human Rights Task Force is involved in that education in the schools?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a program that you work with the
counselors? I'm just saying that this was a response to a call that came into mm-hmm. us. Right.
Okay.
Have you gotten in the last year, other calls that were outside of the school environment about
Definitely.
Harassment?
Yes.
I'd be interested to hear the nature of those, the types of harassment that might be going on around Sandpoint.
Well, I think that there is certainly people being harassed as for their race.
This might be somebody like in a parking lot and have somebody yell at you, mm-hmm. or that kind of.
Or some people that do feel like they're being singled out. And
the one that I remember, the call that came in was from someone who was in a rental property and felt that neighbors were harassing her national children.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. What I remember. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point we referred her to Idaho Fair Housing,
mm-hmm.
Which is in Moscow. I think that's in Moscow.
And there was the case during the election in which the Democratic
staffer
felt he was being harassed and actually left, mm-hmm. because he was concerned about his safety. And that would be over his political belief, I assume, mm-hmm. more than some of these other factors.
You know, we were talking before the show that Sandpoint stands out as a leader in non-discrimination, or, you know, they have a proclamation that they came out and they were the first city in Idaho. Can you kind of disseminate a little bit of that information of how, mm-hmm. Sandpoint and what the state holds as non-discriminatory policy and what Sandpoint has and in the, mm-hmm. county? And then, that picture.
Do you want to talk about the Sandpoint?
The Sandpoint, yes, this is pretty neat. They passed a citywide non-discrimination ordinance in December of 2011, which became effective in January 2012. And that ordinance ensures that all persons, regardless of sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression, enjoy the full benefits of citizenship and are afforded equal opportunities for employment, housing, commercial property, and the use of public accommodations. And if anyone has a complaint, they go to the city. There is a committee that they then form of three people. And their intent is to bring about mediation. They don't do anything in the court right away. They just want to bring people together. If they can't solve it in that way, then they go to city attorney Scott Campbell, and then he will proceed from there.
And that was an add-on to the state non-discriminatory policy, that no discrimination against race. And,
right. To add sexual orientation and gender identity to the protected classes.
Which the state itself has not yet done.
Correct. No. Right. And that's why it needed to be done in Sandpoint, because everyone in Idaho is under the Human Rights Act, and under that, they are protected according to those other classes.
Mm-hmm.
So disability is included, and ethnic and racial discrimination.
And there's still a movement down at the State House during the legislative session to add the words.
There has been for the last 10 years.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know that they're going to be active this year or not, perhaps, but it's been a very discouraging effort.
At the state level.
Absolutely. Yes. Right.
But some other cities did follow Sandpoint's lead.
Right. I think there are 13 other cities now that have done that.
Among them is Boise, I believe.
Including Boise.
Yeah, which is our largest city.
Yeah. Right.
So it's happening on a locality-by-locality basis, right. Although the state itself hasn't come along that way.
Right.
So that's in the city. But in the county, right. Those three words are excluded.
Four words
excluded.
That's right. And so people in the county are not protected, and therefore it's legal to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity in housing, in employment, and in, you know, just services that are available to people.
Could a county make that proclamation as a county?
Yeah,
I think so.
Okay, so that could be taken to the commissioners as a petition.
Well, and one thing that is important to know, I said housing, but a person that is in HUD housing is protected, because they're protected under federal regulation from discrimination under all of those classes. So if it's housing discrimination in HUD housing, you are protected and you can report or make a complaint if you feel that there is any kind of discrimination.
And of course, this is 88.5 KRFY. This is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. And our guests today are Brenda Hammond and Sharon McCann from the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force. And we're talking about human rights and what our own county, our own human rights task force here in our county can do, is doing, and really disseminating the laws is an important part, and the educational component that you put into place through your mandate and through your mission. Another question I had is, and I kind of alluded to this, the changing focus of your work. I know after the election, I've heard people say, well, I have to stand up for anyone that would be discriminated against, or if they see harassment or intimidation, what can we do? So are you thinking about those kind of answers to people's questions of what can I do?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that has been requested of the task force is to do some kind of training regarding this. But on our Facebook page, there's a neat little video that people can look at. And it talks about if you see someone who is being harassed, the thing to do, the best thing to do in a nonviolent way is just go over and engage in conversation with the person who is being harassed. And engage with them, and you know, you can even offer to move to another place with them. You know, would you like to go out for a cup of coffee? But make a connection with them. Let them know that you are a safe person to be with, and handle the situation in that way rather than engaging with the person that is doing the harassing.
I thought that was unique, and I thought that was a helpful video, mm-hmm. which I did watch. And, of course, if the person's being harassed or intimidated in a physically dangerous way, you call 911 mm-hmm. immediately.
Right.
But mm-hmm. they could also get the Human Rights Task Force involved if it was just questions that they had about what to do. Or so they could always call your number at 208-290-2732.
Correct.
Good place to mention you also have a website with a lot of information, mm-hmm. and that's bchrtf.org. That's the acronym for the group. Mm-hmm. And you have an active Facebook page that I noticed that mm-hmm. you've been actively posting information up there as right. well.
Mm-hmm. And we have a website as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So any organization.
I mean, I was going to say we have an email as well. Not, you just said we had a website.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, and people can go to your website. But again, that's bchrtf.org to contact you via email
right.
because the email information is there.
And like any nonprofit organization, you have to do fundraising to make all this work. Mm-hmm. What's coming up? Do you have any, like you said, maybe trainings on how to stand up and stand with someone who might be having a situation, but what else is coming up for your organization?
Well, we just sent out a fundraising, a stay-at-home tea fundraiser letter. So that timing was pretty good. We hadn't done that for a couple of years, right? So that we just sent that out. We just showed another showing of the Add the Words at the library. But our next event will be the Students' Art Show for Human Rights. We do this every year, Sanborn High, middle school, charter school. And that will be, the show will open on January the 16th at the POAC Gallery. And that's Martin Luther King Day, so we will also have an open mic that same night. And people then read poetry or make some kind of statement regarding civil rights and human rights. And that's a really fun event. The art show is incredible. The students take they look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and they pick one, and then they do an art project related to that. And they're very powerful. It's an incredible way to see how our students are being impacted.
So somebody that's not familiar with that Universal Declaration of Human Rights, tell us more about that.
Well, it started in 1948. Eleanor Roosevelt was actually the person who kind of was the leader of the effort to put together, to codify what people believe are universal human rights. And they include not only civil rights, but social and economic rights, that everyone is entitled to be able to be fairly compensated for their work, entitled to safe housing and shelter and medical care and those kinds of things, which our country, among others, has not really adopted yet as part of our social contract. Mm-hmm. But there are ideals that we need to continue to work toward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're still, I'd say, a lusty debate over some things like, should healthcare be a universal right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people believe that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that probably even oppose some of the legislative attempts to address that probably believe that as well. Everybody mm-hmm. should have yes, basic right. health care. But the argument is about how do we get there?
Right.
And, of course, there's a strong strain of folks that feel it shouldn't be a government
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then there's folks that say, yeah, that is what governments are for.
Right.
So.
Earlier you mentioned, before the show started, that you are working with other organizations that have a similar focus in a collaborative way. Could you expand on that a little bit and share some of that information?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Shortly after the election, actually, I think he'll mind me saying his name, but Gary Payton from the 350sandpoint.org called a number of us, and he had been on a conference call with activists, social justice activists in the field of environmental activism, which is his specialty, and that is the focus of 350sandpoint.org. But he was on the phone with a conference call with the man who started the 350 group, Bill McKibben, as well as activists in dealing with racial, ethnic, immigration, LGBTQ issues. And the consensus was that we need to stand together, that we're stronger together, and support each other at this time. And we've been doing that. The 350 Sandpoint group called together a meeting that week right after the election, or 2 weeks after the election. And there were people there representing different groups. There were some of us there from the task force. There were Native rights people. And the vow is to continue to meet a couple times a month for a while to just see how we can support each other. So there is another meeting of that kind of collaborative social justice activist coalition, perhaps, forming. The next meeting is on December 6th, Tuesday, at the library at 5 o'clock. And lots of people are feeling the need to stand up and take action. Many of us have kind of had the advantage of having privilege because we are white or we are straight or we are middle income, and we don't face a lot of the threats that some other people in our community may face every day. So it's time that we all stand up together, and I think this is a wonderful call to action that 350 Sandpoint has put out, and we're looking forward to working closely with them.
So, of course.
Pardon?
December 10th. December 10th is Human Rights Day.
Oh, right. This
yes.
is another
and
event.
We are going to be celebrating that along with a movie at the library, and I apologize, I can't remember the name of it.
It's a Native American film.
Native that
rights
Jane,
film.
The Mythweaver program is putting on at the library on December 10th, and we will be supporting that.
Yeah. And I believe we have that listed in our events calendar right
That's
now.
Good.
So people can find that on carefy.org. So the election, of course, that's been a hot topic. One thing that the effect of the election has been is energized a lot of social justice organizations, mm-hmm. if you will. How do you view the election through your primary mission here? It seemed to have awakened a lot of grievances and conflict that mm-hmm. I guess it was there all the time, and now it's bubbled to the surface. Give us your read on the election, how that relates to human rights.
There's a lot of rhetoric during the election on really that was fairly blatantly white supremacist, and certainly the white national the term has gone from white supremacy to white nationalism to make it seem, I believe, more palatable. and or alt-right, which is the next step, the next modification of that term, which takes white out of it completely. And yet it is still the same idea of forming an ethno-state and having a place where white people can feel comfortable and not challenged. So certainly we've seen a rise of that kind of rhetoric in the nation. I don't know so much in Bonner County whether I haven't witnessed that. But as in the fields of human rights, in the fields of immigration, in, you know, as far as LGBTQ issues, you know, there's a lot of fear among people. And fear may have driven the election in the direction that it went, but there's a lot of fear in the country now as a result of that election. And we do know, we have heard in our own county of people that are afraid to leave their homes and not knowing what's going to happen next. So it's a time that all of us that believe that we all have the right, a universal right, to be safe in our community and to be respected for our common humanity need to stand up. One of the things that Gary Payton brought up at the 350 meeting was the safety pin campaign, which is going on around the nation and actually around the world. I heard that it started in Sydney, Australia, and I'm not sure that that's true, but I read that where Muslim people were being attacked, and people in Sydney started wearing a little badge that said, "I will ride with you," because women were being afraid to get on the public transportation or feeling that they needed to take their burqa off in order to go on public transportation. So the move was to step up and say, "I'll go with you." And this is a kind of a repetition of the same kind of action, wearing a big safety pin, which is visible, which will symbolize to people that you're safe, that you are a safe place to go to, and that they can trust you or turn to you if they are feeling threatened.
So on the idea of this nationalism or alt-right, how the new terminology does change, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I read an interesting... Yeah, there's been a gazillion opinion pieces since the election. Everybody's reading it. And we're all in our silos. We tend to read the things that reinforce our existing beliefs and don't challenge our beliefs. But one of the things that I read that was interesting from a columnist was that, there are definitely white nationalists that are white supremacists, racist. I mean, Ku Klux Klan guys that were supporting Donald Trump. But this columnist's take was, for most of the people that supported him, it was a different sort of frustration. It wasn't about race or gender. Right. It was about really the fact that they're unable to get ahead and they feel like the system is rigged against them. And their way of reacting to that was by electing a guy that's an outsider that they hope will shake things up. And I just wanted to throw that in there because...
I think it's important.
I think it's important to remember that, there was an element there that definitely was, I think most people would condemn some of their core beliefs. But an awful lot of the people that came out for Trump were expressing a different sort of dissatisfaction with our government. And I'd like to think that, in this county, the vote was 2-1 for Trump against Hillary Clinton. So we have a lot of Trump supporters in this county, and I would like to think most of those folks are reacting that way.
Absolutely. And I think that we really need to always caution ourselves against painting with too broad a brush. I mean, that's how stereotyping and prejudice starts in the first place, and we need to be open. And I would like to say that the Human Rights Task Force is open to talking with people and trying to understand more about what motivates them and what their fears are, as well as their hopes and aspirations.
It is an opportunity to have a dialogue about these things.
Absolutely.
It's right here in our community and between people, and I believe we have a lot more common ground than we have differences. But we lose sight of the common ground because the differences have been so blown up by the inflamed emotions of the election.
Well said. We're just about
that's my two cents.
That's your two cents. We'll take that. we're just about out of time, but it's been a wonderful conversation, and we're so fortunate to have an organization such as the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force and your dedication. So thank you very much for coming in, sharing what you can do, and we'll be looking for those collaborative moments that we can bring people together. You know, it really sounds like that's, as you said, stronger together.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you have a safety pin on, you're, you know, that's a nice thing too.
And to throw out that event again, it's December 6th, is that what I heard for the community
right.
meeting?
Right, at the library. And just kind of an organizational meeting of people with various social justice concerns to come together, work together.
And to get more information about the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force, again, your website is bchrtf.org.
Right.
And you had a phone number?
208-290-2732.
And that thing at the library, what time is that in the evening?
I believe it's 5.
5 o'clock.
I think it's at 5 o'clock.
Also, you can go to
5
the
o'clock.
Website
it is 5
and find
o'clock.
It. Okay.
Yeah. And we'll be in the civic calendar on KRFY.org as well as SandpointOnline.com.
Sounds good. And this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. We're going to take a break and say goodbye to our Bonner County Human Rights Task Force guests. And we have another guest coming in. It's Tricia Sullivan. She's one of the directors at the Sandpoint Waldorf School to talk about an upcoming very special event called the Christmas Fair. We'll be right back. Here is a song right now by Bruno Mars called Count on Me. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And that was Bruno Mars, Count on Me. Appropriate song this morning, and we are live in the studios of 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show with Chris and Susie, and we have a new guest, Tricia Sullivan from the Sandpoint Waldorf School. Good morning, Tricia.
Good morning, Susie and Chris.
Well, we have a very special event coming up.
It's called
the 25th Annual Sandpoint Waldorf School Christmas Fair and Children's Festival.
It is. Can you believe it's been 25 years?
I can.
Because you were there. You
the
are a former Sandpoint Waldorf administrator, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And we did a Christmas fair that very first year in the community hall. And Steve Lyman, Andrea Lyman, the Gillums, everyone was there. And we made it happen. And it was magical.
It's only
gotten better.
Mm-hmm. It is. We talk about it every year. When we come to the planning time, we talk about what a gift it is to the community. And the Waldorf School looks at it as our little package of joy that we offer out to the community every year. And so parents love to be involved in planning it. Children love to come. And we would like to let the community know that it is a gift for them and everyone's welcome to come.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit. What happens at the Christmas fair?
Well, it is a day long of activities and good food and simple, heartwarming activities that are happening throughout the day. One of the most popular things we do is our puppet show on Saturday. We'll have 3 showings of our puppet show at 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 2 p.m., and our kindergarten and early childhood teachers put on a beautiful marionette show every year. This year's theme is the Cobweb Christmas. It's a new production this year. And
did somebody locally write it, or is that?
I think it is an older story that our teachers have interpreted for this play. And they'll put that on, and children 3, 4, 5 years old love the puppet show every year, and older kids as well. I have a daughter who's a 6th grader, and she still loves to go to the puppet shows.
And even older people like us.
I see a little bit of gray hair in the room,
that's
too,
right.
Sometimes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I've been to the puppet show. It's really, like you said, a heartwarming event. Part of what makes it so charming is the kids that are watching it are so into it.
It's like
miles beyond what you see when they're engaging with a screen nowadays, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. They're leaning forward, eyes wide open, and really excited to be there and be a part of it. So, And we also have a new event that is just we've been doing for the last few years. It's called the Crystal Cave, and that has been very popular as well. Children crawl through a secret tunnel, and they open up into a sparkling, magical world of crystals and gems and rocks, and they get to take a little treasure with them. And so children have been loving that event as well. And we have crafting, children's crafts all day. We have adult volunteers who are helping to guide the crafts with children. We have lunch available, desserts. It's a packed day.
And not to mention, there's a ton of really great handcrafted gift items for people to be buying for Christmas presents.
Absolutely. Yeah. While the kids are upstairs doing activities, adults can sneak down to the basement and get all their Christmas shopping finished. We have local artisans and crafters. We have over 20 artisans and crafters who will be in the lower level at the school and selling their items as well during the day. So there's something for the little ones, everybody in the middle, and older folks as well. So the whole family can come.
It kind of brings a spirit of something besides the commercial aspect of Christmas into the lives of the children and the families that participate. And as you said, the whole community is invited. And one of those aspects is the children's store. It's a place where children can go in and for just a ticket or two, buy something or exchange for the ticket, something special for someone in their family. All those items have been donated and they're really some really cool things. And then they take them over to a table and wrap them, put a tag on them. Then they can walk out with a bag full of Christmas presents for someone special in their family. Which I think is excellent. It's different than the commercial aspect. It's a gift. And then in the children's craft room, they can make things with their own hands that can become gifts or ornaments on a tree.
It is. It's about making the Christmas, making that Christmas feeling and that sharing and generosity in the community alive and giving a space to do that. We recycle gifts so everybody can share in the fun.
So I think I want to throw out something you mentioned as you came in this morning, that there's a way for people to get some tickets to that puppet show.
Absolutely. We would love to give people tickets to the puppet show. We would be happy to do that. If you wanted to call school, we would love to give out some tickets to the show. If you just call the school right now at 265-2683. And
operators are standing by.
Operators are standing by. And we'll give out a couple of tickets. We'll give out 10 tickets to the puppet show. We'll give each caller a couple tickets to be able to come to the puppet show and enjoy the day.
First five callers. It's like you can't miss if you just call right now.
No.
265-2683. Free tickets to the puppet show. It's definitely a hot ticket.
It is.
I've been there. I'll tell you right now. And if you don't think you can make it, but you know a young family with kids that would enjoy that sort of thing, call for that. That again, that's 265-2683. Free tickets to the Sandpoint Waldorf School's puppet show at the Christmas fair.
This Saturday.
Yeah.
First five callers get a pair of tickets.
Yeah.
265-2683. It sounds wonderful. I know the school is going to transform itself into this magical Christmas event, and it's something special. It's been special for 25 years, and the whole community is invited.
And it's all day Saturday, and your location is at 2007 Sandpoint West Drive, right next to SWAC or Sandpoint West Athletic Club.
Right next to SWAC, across from Traverse Park, near the corner of Lincoln and Pine.
And, you know, we got a couple minutes. Why don't you give us the short story on what is Sandpoint Waldorf School all about?
Sandpoint Waldorf School has been in the community for 25 years. Susie and Chris, both early parents, brought their kids to the Sandpoint Waldorf School. And we are an independent school in town. We're a nonprofit. And we're providing an education for children from 18 months through 8th grade. That is a curriculum that is specific to Waldorf schools that is targeted at the developmental needs of children. So the curriculum meeting the developmental needs of children. So making sure that children get what they need when they need it.
Yeah, so it's kind of marked more by where the children are in their development more than their chronological chronological age.
Yes.
So it's a different sort of education in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
One of the nice things I've noticed over the years is a child is a unique individual. We all know that when our children are born. And the school can look at those children as individuals rather than a statistic or something to be tested. And they usually thrive so well, and their talents and their abilities and their destiny comes out and through the process that they are astute students in the high school.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this event on Saturday will give you a little bit of a flavor of what we're talking about. It will engage all of the senses. There will be things to see and touch and feel and make and eat and enjoy. And it's that community aspect that children can really be a part of. Mm-hmm. So the whole family can come.
All right. Well, Tricia Sullivan, thank you from the Sandpoint Waldorf School for coming in and telling us about this Saturday, December 3rd from 10 to 4 p.m., Sandpoint Waldorf School's Christmas Fair and Children's Festival. The whole community is invited.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for all your good work at KRFY. We appreciate your support in the community.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. We're going to take a short musical break while Tricia scurries on out, and we'll be right back with a little community calendar. This is Neil Young, Who's Gonna Stand Up? We'll be right back. And that was Neil Young, Who's Gonna Stand Up? A little bit of that song, most of that song. And we are back live in the studios of 88.5 KRFY, and this is The Morning Show. And Chris, what's going on in town besides the annual corporation meeting of the community radio station here tonight at the library at 6?
And everyone's invited to that, of course. Come in and hear what's happening with your community radio station right here, KRFY 88.5. Well, of course, there's a huge calendar of events going on here. We mentioned that the Festival of Trees is having their family night. That's tomorrow. Tomorrow there is a concert at the Hive, the Chris Robinson Brotherhood. I'm not familiar with this music, but he's supposed to be very good. And then another big event, annual event happening, is the Backcountry Film Festival. That's being put on by Selkirk Outdoor Leadership and Education. That's at the Panada Theater. Doors open at 6 p.m. Films start at 7 p.m. That's on Friday. And Schweitzer's opening on Friday as well. The Waldorf School Christmas Fair is on Saturday. Ton of things going on. Check our calendars, krfy.org or sandpointonline.com.
I think that's a great idea. I also want to talk about, and you can talk with me about this too. Next week, we have a special event here at KRFY. On Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, KRFY will be hosting a special three-day on-air end-of-the-year giving appeal with a special morning show at 8 on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and live broadcasting throughout the day until 5 p.m. And what do you want to say about that, Chris?
Well, I'd say if you're a listener of KRFY, that you should be joining KRFY. And joining is basically, actually, you join when you listen, believe it or not. You don't have to do anything. We want listeners. But if you want to support a community radio station that has no commercial support, we do have underwriters, but we don't run commercials on air. And we're endeavoring to make this a voice for the community, for all aspects of our community, then you should join KRFY or provide a end-of-the-year donation. We are a 501c3, so your donation is going to be tax-deductible. Listen to next week. We'll tell you more about that.
It's just giving your community radio station a little Christmas present and helping us go into 2017 fiscally strong.
Yeah. And one thing that we do endeavor to do is support the other nonprofit groups here in town. By supporting KRFY, in a way, you're helping support all the other nonprofit groups that we bring in every week to talk about the things that they're doing to help make Sandpoint a better place.
Exactly, our service organizations. So we're out of time, Chris. Guess what? We are. And this is the KRFY Morning Show. Thanks for being with us this day. We're going to go out with a special song by Ella Fitzgerald called Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow. Mm-hmm. We hope you have a beautiful day.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.